October 30th. Halftime Haunting. I saw death during the halftime show. While I blasted the same series of half notes on my trombone over and over, I got my first real view of the thing that's been haunting me since the day I turned 6. It was as tall as my dad, but too skinny to be human. Black fog swirled in constant motion. I swear its glossy, dark face with no features tucked within a hooded cloak stared straight at me. "Daniel," the thing whispered my name. I startled. That was new. Nobody else noticed. The monster hovered on the stairs, next to Ms. Schmidt, and an old guy wearing a black bowler hat. Weird, I'd never seen her at a football game before. As far as I knew, Ms. Schmidt didn't have any children or grandchildren. The band exited the field, and Mr. Washington released us for third quarter break. I dashed to where death had been, but it had vanished. I turned to find Rena behind me, scowling.
"You took off running,"
she said, panting as she stepped up and punched me in the arm.
"Everything okay, Daniel?"
Frantic, I couldn't stop searching the stadium. Death had to still be here, somewhere.
"No, not okay,"
I said, turning to face the visitor's stands across the field. I needed to find it. Death floated by the fence behind the sidelines.
"Daniel,"
it called to me again. I grabbed Rena by the shoulder and pointed.
"Please tell me you see and hear it,"
I begged. Rena stared hard across the stadium, her eyes squinting with effort.
"Nope, I don't see anything unusual. Sorry."
I almost tripped, running down the ramp out of the bleachers. Rena tried to keep up.
"Daniel, stop!"
I skidded to a halt and leaned up against a fence.
"It's back,"
I mumbled, giving her a knowing glance. Through all the years of my struggle with the strange specter, Rena Salverson was the only person besides Grandpa Kinney who believed me without fail, though she'd never seen it herself. I needed her faith in me. I motioned with both hands toward the field.
"It stood in the stands, staring at me through halftime,"
I said, finally raising my eyes to meet hers.
"For the first time, I actually saw the thing I've told you about. It moved to the visitor side after the show."
Rena gave me a look like I'd just asked her to jump in a pool full of ice cubes. She nodded and grabbed my hand.
"Let's go find it then."
We circled the entire stadium, but the monster had disappeared. After the football game, Dad dropped Rena and me off at Brian Patterson's house for his Halloween spectacular, while Mom helped finish cleaning up in the concession stand.
"You sure you want to do this?"
Rena asked. I shrugged. "We'll be outcasts if we don't play for a little while." Brian caught us walking up the driveway.
"Everybody's around back. Come on, we're about to start the first round."
Brian, my trombone section leader, was a tall, lanky junior with curly dark hair. He had taken a liking to me since the first day of rookie band camp. Fortunately for Rena and me, Brian and his girlfriend Kelly knew us from the Drowsy Dragon, our local game and comic book store. Almost every member of the Capitol Marching Eagles attended Brian's Halloween Spectacular. We all loved playing a creepy hide-and-seek game revolving around the silly stories of Graveyard Gus, a thin, faceless monster in a tattered black suit. Brian passed out slips of paper and golf pencils.
"You know the drill. Write your name and fold it in half. We'll draw Gus from a hat in a few minutes,"
Brian called out above the din of the crowd. I promptly wadded up my slip and started to stuff it in my pocket.
"Don't want to be Gus?"
Rena said as she grabbed the slip of paper from my hand. My face and ears burned with embarrassment.
"Didn't want you to see. Rather not, tonight,"
She scratched her name on her slip, then wrote her name on mine as well.
I'd love to be Graveyard Gus. Never done it before.
Whomever was dubbed Gus during a given round played the game with a handy-dandy pair of night vision goggles Brian's dad purchased, so everybody wanted a turn to be the monster. I sighed. Rena won the first lottery, and she led off.
Daniel, come join Kelly and me in the first search group.
Brian called with a wave toward him. I jogged over to join them. At least running around in the woods would make me forget about death for a while. The first pack of searchers seeking the 8 pages of Gus's journal consisted of 4 groups of 3. Brian, Kelly, and I were a team. Each of us carried a flashlight. The object of the hide-and-seek game was for Graveyard Gus to hide the pages of his journal and try to prevent the seekers from gathering them all to defeat him. If Gus, in this case Rena, tagged any of us with her flashlight, we died and transformed into a ghost minion. Ghost minions were required to stay with Gus and help kill everybody else. If the seekers managed to locate and gather all 8 pages of the journal, then Gus lost. Brian, Kelly, and I dashed up a steep path into the woods and barreled down a hill away from the party.
I'll keep my light. You two turn yours off and follow me, Brian commanded.
We did as he said and ran down a narrow, winding path that emptied into a clearing where Brian turned off his light. We stopped and listened. For a moment, I only heard my own ragged breath and blood pounding in my ears. The scent of damp leaves filled my nostrils.
Give our eyes a moment to adjust, Brian said. The moon's bright tonight. We'll be better off using natural light instead of flashlights.
I nodded, still panting. Kelly pulled her hoodie up, covering her long blonde hair. We often teased her about looking like an elf. She was tall, and her ears were slightly pointy. Then again, people used to make fun of me for looking like Link from the Zelda games with my long, stringy hair before I had it cut for Grandfather Ellsworth's funeral last month. At least my ears weren't pointy. Out here, away from the house, a thick and oppressive darkness draped the forest. It didn't take long. My eyes adjusted quickly, and I saw everything clearly in the moonlight. I jumped as leaves rustled to my right. I jerked around, but found nothing there. Brian and Kelly scanned the clearing, showing no signs they'd heard anything or seen me jump.
Okay, Brian whispered. Let's go. Off this way. Follow my lead and stay close.
He motioned to the left. I followed behind Kelly, and we found a journal page in the middle of the path.
That's one!
Kelly said triumphantly, waving the page in her hand before folding it and stuffing it in her hoodie. We continued on the path, but stopped because of a commotion up ahead. I noticed a slash of light through the trees, and it sounded like Rena had claimed her first victim. Rena's familiar victory cackle filled my ears, and I smiled, glad she was having fun.
This way! Go! Go, go!
Brian whispered. Callie and I backed up the path, letting Brian pass us. We jumped off to another trail, where we found a second page. Brian said something, but I didn't catch what, because cold breath brushed against my neck, and I jerked around. I stood face to face with death, staring into its featureless, too black face.
Daniel,
it whispered again. Without warning, Kelly turned around and emitted a blood-curdling scream. She spun the opposite direction and bolted up a path away toward the house. Brian doubled over laughing. I took a step back as Death stretched a clawed appendage with 3 long bony fingers as it inched toward me. I found nothing to laugh about. Not knowing what else to do, I switched my flashlight on and pointed it at the apparition. The light stopped short of the creature, never touching it.
Daniel,
Death whispered. Brian obviously didn't hear it. Brian grabbed my shoulder and squeezed.
No worries. My dad must have set some decorations out here to scare us.
Maybe Brian did see it. That thought scared me even more. Death levitated a foot higher, then lurched forward.
I ducked to the left, landing in a pile of leaves, just missing an old rotting log.
Brian didn't move fast enough. The smoky creature enveloped my friend. Brian fell to the ground, landing roughly across the trail, face down, but I didn't dare check on him.
Death lurched, turned toward me, then stopped.
Calm came over me. I stared at the glossy black face and saw my own features reflected there. Suddenly, I remembered something Grandpa Kinney had said the last time we watched The Empire Strikes Back. When Luke fought Darth Vader in the cave on Dagobah and found his own head inside the helmet, Grandpa said,
"Remember that scene, Daniel."
I understood. Even so, my heart thudded in my chest and blood pounded in my ears. This creature was part of me in a way I didn't comprehend, but I knew I possessed the power within me to banish it.
"Daniel,"
Death said with a different, angry, demanding tone. I closed my eyes for only a heartbeat as I flicked the switch of my flashlight off, then on again. The handle felt warm in my hand. My fingers tingled as the flashlight thrummed to life, and I heard the click-snap hiss of a lightsaber flaring to life, just like in the movies. Without warning, the flashlight emitted a familiar blade of blue light. Death lunged toward me with a high-pitched hiss, sounding like steam escaping a two-full tea kettle. I swung the blade of solid blue light. I heard a sizzling crackle at the moment of contact, followed by a thunderous pop, like a very large pickle jar being opened. A shockwave of invisible force rippled out, knocking me backward, but I managed to keep my footing. To my astonishment, the creature burst into a shower of purple sparks and thick black ash. The scent of rubbing alcohol permeated the air. I extinguished the lightsaber flashlight and collapsed to my knees. Something warm and wet dripped down my face. My nose was bleeding. I held the sleeve of my jacket pressed against one nostril for a minute, and the bleeding stopped. Dizziness clouded my head. A wave of utter exhaustion knocked me to my hands and knees, and it was hard to breathe for a moment. I heard Rena cackle nearby. The sound brought me back to reality. I scrambled to my feet and over to where Brian now lay flat on his back. He was breathing like he was asleep, and he didn't look hurt. I picked up the flashlight and stared at it in my hand. I wasn't sure if all that had been real. I flicked the switch, finding the shaft still warm, and the lightsaber flashlight ignited once again.
"Holy crap!"
I said to myself, only I didn't say crap. Brian stirred. So I turned off the lightsaber flashlight and bent down on one knee next to him.
"What happened?"
Brian asked as he struggled to sit up.
"You fell and hit your head,"
I lied.
"Think you passed out for a moment."
Brian scrubbed fingers through his curly hair.
"Kind of fuzzy. I remember Kelly screaming, but then nothing. Really weird."
"Think I spooked her," I said. "I jumped because of an animal moving in the leaves, and she got scared." Apparently, he believed me.
A bright light flared across us, followed by Rena's victory wail. "Gotcha, suckers!"
I couldn't help but laugh. The three ghosts with her all laughed, sharing in her victory, too.
"Brian fell and hit his head. Help me get him back to the house."
I managed to convince Kelly we'd both only seen shadows or an animal. Brian recovered quickly after we got him up and walking, though in the light of the bonfire in the backyard, he appeared a little haggard. Dad picked us up promptly at midnight. I didn't say a word about my confrontation with death to anybody. The car came to a stop, a block short of Rena's house for some reason.
"Why'd you stop the car here?" I asked.
"Thought you two might want to walk up to the house by yourselves," Dad said with a sly grin. My ears started to burn.
"This is not a date. Rena is my best friend, for the love of God, and I'm 13.
My voice squeaked a little, which made me furious. Thankfully, Rena didn't say a word, and I didn't even look at her as I slammed my door shut. We walked together in silence. Thoughts about the improbability of death stalking me and what had just happened swirled around like a cloud of gnats I couldn't swat away. I thought about the monster charging and flinched at the memory.
"You okay?"
Rena asked. She stopped, turning toward me.
"You mad because I won? Mad at your dad? Or both?"
"None of the above," I whispered, my head dropped, chin to my chest. "A lot of crazy stuff is going on." Rena took a step closer.
"Okay, what really happened in the woods? I knew you were lying. Spill."
I didn't want to tell her about the monster. My stomach hurt, and my mouth went dry. She cocked her head quizzically to the left, and her emerald eyes invited me to talk. This was Rena. She'd believe me, wouldn't she?
"Something weird happened in the woods tonight at Brian's. He didn't fall and hit his head."
I swallowed hard, then continued. "The shadow monster, Death, it appeared, charged at us, knocked Brian down, and tried to attack me." Rena's brows furrowed, her eyes narrowing.
"You actually saw this thing out there?"
Her voice got all squeaky, and she wrinkled her nose like she does when she gets mad.
"You said you saw it knock Brian down."
The pit in my stomach started to burn. I lowered my eyes again, unable to bear her uncertainty.
"It came at me, and somehow I changed the flashlight into a lightsaber. Crazy as it sounds, I think I have magic powers."
I croaked, my voice straining, scarcely audible, and I closed my eyes. A painful silence lasted forever. "At least she didn't laugh," I told myself. Rena broke the silence by exhaling loudly.
"We both swore we'd never lie to one another."
I had only heard her use that tone one other time when we were little. I had ripped her favorite Spider-Man comic book by accident. That was the only time I had ever lied to her. After that, we made a solemn vow, and now she thought I'd broken it. I opened my eyes to Rena standing, arms crossed, her head now cocked to the right. Never a good sign. I shook my head.
"I couldn't tell the truth back there. I'm telling you now. You asked if something was wrong, and I'm telling you what's bothering me."
She started to reply, but stopped herself.
"I'm not making this stuff up," I pleaded. "You always believed me about death before."
I halted, unable to finish the thought. Rena's shoulders sagged slightly, and her head straightened.
"Prove it,"
she demanded. My ears started to burn again, and my whole body warmed with anger. I couldn't believe my best friend doubted me.
"Fine,"
I said louder than I had intended, reaching into my backpack. I glanced up and down the dark street, saw nobody around, and Dad was just out of sight down the block. I pulled the flashlight out and ignited the lightsaber flashlight with a snap hiss. I swung downward and the blade whirred. I stepped past Rena, whose eyes were wide and jabbed forward. The lightsaber flashlight pierced the tree trunk behind her. The smell of burning wood filled the air as smoke wafted from the bark. I pulled it out and deactivated the device. The crackling of small flames around the hole in the tree burned between us like a line we weren't allowed to cross. I scowled. Tears welled in Rena's wide open eyes, and she rushed toward me. She threw her arms around my neck and shoulders, hugging me desperately.
"I'm so sorry. I believe you."
For a long minute, I refused to respond. The tears Rena rained on my shoulder slowly extinguished my anger. Finally, I hugged her back. "I will never lie to you," I said softly. She pulled away, wiping her face with the back of her hand.
"You have to admit, this is all kind of weird."
I put the lightsaber flashlight back in my pack.
"Exactly. I need someone to not think I'm crazy and help me understand what's happening to me." "I'll always believe you," Rena said timidly.
We started up the street toward her house again.
"You created that lightsaber flashlight?"
"Not a trick, I swear. I'll tell you more about it later after I start figuring some of it out myself." Standing at her front door, Rena looked at me in silence for a moment.
"If you trust me, we can figure all this out together," she finally said in a whisper.
I nervously shoved my hands in my pockets.
"Thanks. I'm sorry I lied." "I understand. You had to. But don't let it happen again."
She smiled. I smiled back, then turned on my heel and ran back down the street to the car. When we got home, I retreated to my bedroom and pulled out my smartphone. It had been fully charged when we arrived at Brian's, but now was almost dead. I speed-dialed Grandpa Kinney.
"Something wrong?"
Grandpa answered.
"I need to talk to you. Something happened tonight."
"Is it gone?" he asked.
A cold chill crept up my spine. He knew exactly why I called.